Mulan is a legendary folk heroine from the Northern and Southern Dynasty era of Chinese history, roughly from 4th to 6th century CE. The story of Mulan was originally told in the Ballad of Mulan as a yuefu genre, in which Chinese poems were composed in a folk song style. Over the centuries, the story of Mulan has been reiterated, being performed on the stage, adapted for the screen, and rewritten as dramas for television and even animated films. Thank you for tuning in. I'm Claire Hennessy. Joining us today is Dr. Xiamen Kua, Associate Professor of East Asian Languages and Cultures and Comparative Literature at Bryn Mawr College. Among her expertise ranging from graphic narratives to Chinese literature, she's best known for her book with Wild Enema titled Mulan, Five Versions of a Classic Chinese Legend. Welcome, Xiamen. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Could you please let us know what are the inspirations for putting together these five versions of Mulan?
So the project came together, or rather I came to the project because of my PhD advisor and mentor, Wild Enema, who was my dissertation advisor at Harvard. He was editing a series of books about traditional tales in China, and one of the books that he selected to focus on was going to be about Mulan. And because I had written one of my chapters of my dissertation, which was on the playwright Xu Wei, one of the plays that he wrote was about Mulan. It was called The Female Mulan. He asked me if I would take on this volume. Sort of on an anecdotal level, it was a bit of a perfect request at the time, because I was at myself a bit of a crossroads in terms of social roles. I was a new parent, and I wasn't sure if I could balance being a mother and being a professional. And it seemed to me that those anxieties in 2010 were the same kinds of problems that Mulan herself encountered as a woman and as a professional, if you can call it that. So I really embraced that idea. And because we knew that we wanted to start with the earliest iterations of the story, we wanted to include, of course, the first two poems, and then thought of the Xu Wei play as a midpoint chronologically in terms of how we were putting the book together. And then we wanted to include two Chinese versions from the 20th century. So we picked a Peking opera text and the film screenplay to kind of round it out and to talk about the ways that even before it came into America, it was already transforming and having different perspectives, different emphases over time.
Interesting. What are the key rhetorics of the poem that you think are important for us to learn about today?
Well, I think one of the reasons that Mulan is so elastic, I guess, is that, one of the most obvious things about it is this idea about gender, right? How much of gender is indicative of what we're capable of doing or not, and how much of that is socially constructed. And, besides that, however, I think that it speaks to essential questions about identity in general. And it questions the roles that children have in relationship to their parents. Sometimes in versions, who's responsible among siblings in a family. And of course, questions, especially when we're looking in the 20th century, questions of patriotism and national or ethnic identity, political affiliations. And, in many ways, this the story speaks to all of those questions about where we see ourselves and how other people see us.
Right. Well, many readers find it unconvincing almost that Mulan has never been discovered as a woman during her 12 years of serving as an army soldier. This may be one of the reasons that led many ensuing writers or playwrights to supplement additional details to the original narrative. Could you please walk us through the major narratorial and rhetorical shifts that might have provided some explanations, either for this particular dubiosity or just as a matter of overall evolutionary process?
Sure. I mean, I think from a formal perspective, it is the case that, you know, with a poem in which I should backtrack a little bit and say that in the poem, there isn't as much an emphasis on how she went through the 12 years. I mean, there's definitely an expression of surprise, right? The, the fellow soldiers comment on how could we have not known? And in fact, Mulan ends the poem by saying, when two rabbits are running next to each other, you can't tell which one is male and which one is female. And that's sort of, you know, the end of the discussion about it. When we get to versions that are plays, now you have the author having to deal with the reality of having a physical body on stage, and the whole audience is looking at this person, whether it's played by the character's played by a male actor or a female actor. It changes how the audience themselves react to it. And so the play tries to deal with the confusion or the doubt and comes about this in a variety of ways. I think often it ends up pointing to the way that costume, the way that we dress ourselves, is the first surface detail that most people rely on in terms of judging what they think they see. And so in the case of the Xu Wei play, there are a few situations in which Mulan has to hide her female body. Mm-hmm. And so in the case of Mulan in the Xu Wei play, it's the bound feet, which is really interesting, right? Because, you know, you could bind a boy's feet. And I'm not suggesting that you do, but that's actually an externally, imposed gender distinction. And yet that's her biggest concern, right? That someone could see that she has these bound feet. And so in the play, they introduce a special powder that she can apply to her feet that helps make them expand again, and then another powder that helps them shrink back when she goes back to being a girl. And then, you know, of course, the other issue is going to the bathroom in public or bathing, right?
That's so right. I've been always wondering that part since a child.
So, right. So, you know, in the case of the Xu Wei play, she just says, you know, I have to make sure I never go to the bathroom in front of anybody. And apparently she succeeds for 12 years. I guess you can imagine it's relatable to when you're an undergraduate in a dorm and you don't want to share a bathroom with, you know, 12 other people. But that's sort of how they deal with it. And in the film version, they have a similar situation where she refuses to wash her feet in front of the other people. And that could serve as maybe a metonym for any other kind of nakedness in that context. But yes, you're right. You know, it is mysterious. And some versions kind of bend over backwards to at least address it, although they don't go into that much detail about how indeed she hides it for this amount of time.
Very interesting. What can we learn about women's status and the social expectations of a woman from Mulan's cross-dressing?
Well, you know, I think that's a really interesting question. And I almost, I'd like to propose a bit of a thought experiment, if you will, to think about what it suggests about social expectations. If you can imagine that there's a village that is under threat of some kind, but that the threat is this, right? A messenger comes from the emperor, and the messenger says, the nation is really in peril. You know, there are these barbarians. They're coming from, you know, north, south, east, or west, and they say that we're going to be doomed unless we're able to produce 12 million yards of fabric, right? And if we don't do that, we'll all be doomed. And so we need all of the daughters of the village to go to their looms and start weaving. And in a certain family, say we'll call it the Hua family, there's only a son, and his mother's too old to weave. So he puts on a dress, and he hurries to the loom, and he produces textiles. And he produces so much textiles that the emperor is so impressed and rewards him. And then he says, actually, I'm a man, and I'm going to go, you know, I'm going to go feed the horses, right? When you put it in that context, you start to think, well, why don't I want to watch that movie? Right? Like, why is that not interesting? And that then raises these questions about why it would be so fantastical or absurd or unbelievable that a woman dressing up as a man and going to battle is heroic and courageous and self-sacrificing and brave, whereas we don't have those prejudices against, you know, a man, right? We kind of take it as a baseline that everyone can weave. And, you know, even if we have the same stakes, right? Even if we say, oh, the nation's going to fall apart, you know, maybe it'll be economic devastation. There isn't really a parallel. And so I think, you know, it suggests that in the various versions that we see, a lower expectation of what women are capable of or expected from, and you know, what that means to each individual writer is different each time, and they have their own versions of it. But I do think, you know, like I said, I would like to imagine a world where the reverse story was in play as well.
Right. Well, speaking of a lower expectation of women, I wonder, how can a poem written by a minor ethnicity that endorsed the women's success in their society survive the censorship of Confucianism, which was the dominant ideology of the Chinese Han culture, and which literally looked down upon women? In other words, how did the Ballad of Mulan even get assimilated into the Han culture?
Well, I mean, I a couple of things. I think one of the problems about this, you know, that our lack of knowledge really about the authorship of this poem is we don't quite know, right, whether this was an ethnic minority writing this poem, or if it was a Han majority, you know, author writing in the voice of a ethnic minority perspective. But you're right that it does take on this set of social roles and ideas about people on the margin, whether it's because of gender or ethnicity, as central. And I suppose, even in that case, it's hard to know what what the significance is of that in the sense that, you know, we find out time and time again in our own society as well, mm-hmm. that you can be entertained by and even hold up as a hero, a person of a marginalized or minority status. But that doesn't necessarily mean that your society is, you know, welcoming of and tolerant of that minority perspective, right? That it can be an entertainment and it can even be a heroic symbol, mm-hmm. When it's within the realm of fiction.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, maybe not always in the real world.
You're now listening to The Global Novel, a literature podcast that surveys the narratology of world literatures from antiquity to modernity through a critical lens and aims to make academic education in literature accessible to the world. You can now find us on major social media, including Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, and Tumblr, by just typing in your searching engine with The Global Novel Podcast.
唧唧复唧唧，木兰当户织。
A sigh, a sigh, and then a sigh. Mulan was sitting at the door and weaving. One did not hear the sound of loom and shuttle. One only hear her heave these heavy sighs. When she was asked the object of her love, when she was asked who occupied her thoughts, she did not have a man she was in love with. There was no boy who occupied her thoughts. Last night I saw the summons from the army. The Khan is mobilizing all his troops. The list of summoned men comes in 12 copies. Every copy lists my father's name. My father has, alas, no grown-up son, and I, Mulan, have no adult brother. I want to buy a saddle and a horse to take my father's place and join the army. The eastern market, there she bought a horse. The western market, there she bought a saddle. The southern market, there she bought a bridle. The northern market, there she bought a whip. At dawn, she said goodbye to her dear parents. At night, she rested by the Yellow River. She did not hear her parents' voices calling for their daughter. She only heard the Yellow River's flowing water, always splashing, splashing. At dawn, she left the Yellow River's bank. At night, she rested on Black Mountain's top. She did not hear her parents' voices calling for their daughter. She only heard the whining of Crimson Mountain's Hoonish horseman. Myriads of miles, she joined the thick of battle, crossing the mountain passes as if flying. Winds from the north transmitted metal rattles. A freezing light shone on her iron armor. 100 battles and the brass were dead. After 10 years, the bravest men returned. When they returned, they met the Son of Heaven, the Son of Heaven seated on his throne. Their honorary rank went up 12 steps, and their rewards were counted in the millions. The Khan asked Mulan what he might desire. I, Mulan, do not care for an appointment here at court. Give me your racer good for 1,000 miles to take me back again to my old hometown. Hearing their daughter had arrived, her parents went out the city, welcoming her back home. Hearing her elder sister had arrived, his sister put on her bright red outfit at the door. Hearing his elder sister had arrived, her brother sharpened his knife that brightly flashed in front of pigs and sheep. Open the gate to my pavilion on the east. Let me sit down in my old western room. I will take off the dress I wore in battle. I will put on the skirt I used to wear. Close to the window, she did up her hair. Facing the mirror, she applied makeup. She went outside and saw her army buddies. Her army buddies were all flabbergasted. We marched together for these 12 long years and absolutely had no clue that Mulan was a girl. The male hare wildly kicks its feet. The female hare has shifty eyes, but when a pair of hares run side by side, who can distinguish whether I am in fact male or female?
We hope you have enjoyed the episode so far. If you want to hear the entire episode, you can subscribe at theglobalnovel.com/subscribe. Thank you so much for listening.